Command Judge Shaw, injury law, 732-888-8888.
Demand Judd.
Demand justice. Demand Judd. The injury accident professionals. First class service. Judd gets it done. Maximum compensation's our goal. See judgeshawinjurylaw.com. Demand Judge Shaw, injury law, 732-888-8888.
Demand Judd.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Welcome, everybody, to Hook, Line, and Splitter, presented by Judge Shaw Injury Law, Klein, and Splitter, Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. We understand the toll that injuries take on families, and Judge Shaw Injury Law is here to help. For a free consultation, call 1-866-909-6894. Or visit JudShawInjuryLaw.com. That's Judd with 2D, ShawInjuryLaw.com. Travis Hergert, Phillies minor league pitching coordinator, our guest today. He was awesome. 45, almost 50 minutes with Travis talking about his background. He came from junior college in Iowa, where he still lives. And we talked about how he came to the Phillies, what they look for, how do they develop players, integration of the art of pitching and the science of pitching. We talk about some of the guys throughout the minor league system, guys that are in Reading now that played with the Blue Claws recently or last year. We talk about at the end some guys from Clearwater that you might see with the Blue Claws either this year or certainly next year and a whole lot more. So I don't want to keep you too long here at the beginning. Let's get right to it. Here's Phillies minor league pitching coordinator, Travis Hergert. Pleased to be joined by Phillies pitching coordinator, Travis Hergert, who joins us from Altoona. He's with Double-A Reading this week. Travis, thanks so much. How are you?
I'm great, Greg. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
How many weeks a month are you out on the road with a group?
Pretty much almost every week. I try to spend 4 or 5 days, if not the whole week, with each affiliate, see every pitcher at least one time through. But it's a lot of bouncing around. I think I've been with Jersey 3 or 4 times this year, just once in Shoretown ballpark, but I've been able to catch them on the road a couple of times. But you're back and forth between levels, and I just spent 3 days in AAA before this trip, and then I'll head to Clearwater next week with our new draft guys. So it's a lot of bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, it's got to be an exciting time of the year as they added a bunch of new pitchers for you too.
Yeah, Brian Barber and staff have been really good to us over the last 4 years, and I know they got a lot of big physical arms, big stuff, which Brian and company continue to get for us. And that's good for us on the player development side, and we'll keep them coming.
Somebody told me a story that Brian, when he came in, told somebody in Clearwater, like, hey, you're not going to need to order too many like size mediums or size larges anymore. And it's true, because you look at all these guys that he drafts, you know, especially the pitchers, they're all like 6'5", 6'4", 6'3".
Yeah, I always joke, you know, that at the amusement park, you got to be this tall to ride this ride. You have to be this tall to pitch in the Phillies, Oregon. it's true. They're big. They're physical. But they're fun to work with. And that's what, you know, Brian has done for us. And obviously him and Preston Mattingly, our player development director, work really well hand in hand when it comes to player acquisitions and draft. And they know how we're going to develop these guys, and it's a great synergy between both departments. And I think you're seeing a ton of success on both sides of the baseball for it.
Well, I was going to ask this later, but might as well start here now. So when Preston came in, he talked about different, you know, he wanted to improve the communication throughout the levels and the integration from the different elements, the different front office positions around the organization. What does that mean for you specifically?
I mean, that's what we've wanted to build. It's a very holistic nature. We're going to look at under every stone possible. And I think, you know, continuity and cohesiveness is so key, especially when you have a big operation, you know, like a player development department, and especially on the pitching side, when you're overseeing, you know, 120, 125 pitchers, you know, from all different levels, from, you know, AAA on down to the DR, and then constant communication with our big league club as well when they have needs, and making sure when they send guys down that, you know, those development initiatives are getting taken care of. So it's not just on the pitching side. It's communicating with our higher performance, with strength and conditioning, mental performance, nutrition, ATC, everyone involved, our research and development, giving us information when it comes into building a pitcher's development plan and, you know, what route we want to take. And it's not a one size fits all, and you got to be creative. And we're really, really fortunate on the pitching front, especially for me. I have a tremendous amount of assistance when it comes to our coordinators. Our director of pitching, Brian Kaplan, is in the big leagues. But, you know, he serves as our liaison and director on the pitching side. And then Caleb Cotham, our big league pitching coach, you know, not many people know this, but I mean, he doesn't stop at the big leagues. He's very integral in working with our minor leaguers and giving us information. And then our coaching staff in the minor leagues is phenomenal. And you have two really good ones there in Jersey with Phil Condari and Brady Lale. We knocked it out of the park this offseason hiring those guys. And then we have two other coordinators, Mark Lowy, who serves in the upper levels, and then Vic Diaz, who serves in the lower levels, and they're tremendous as well. So from a leadership group to our coaching staff, along with the other support staff that we have, like we feel like we're building a machine, and it takes everyone involved.
In the case of Brian and Caleb, how rare is it around baseball to have two guys that spend all their time at the big league level be involved in the development of pitchers at the minor league level?
Yeah, I think it's rare. It may be becoming more of a trend now in Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball. But I mean, for us, it feels like second nature to us. We're always bouncing off ideas and, you know, looking for assistance, whatever it may be. You know, they may see something that we don't, or, you know, vice versa, whatever it is. But I think at the end of the day, when, you know, it isn't just going to be one person that's going to figure out this puzzle, it's going to take all of us involved. And I think the big thing is, you know, they look at it too of, okay, if we can be influential in the minor leagues, that's only going to help them win ball games. And hopefully we're going to World Series each and every year. And you look at their run that they had last year, you know, you look at the innings that Bailey Falter pitched, what Chris Sanchez did and what he's doing again this year, along with another, you know, like Andrew Bilotti and, you know, coming up from AAA early in the year last year and staying in the big leagues, and Jose Alvarado coming down and just, you know, retooling some things and becoming one of the best relievers in baseball. So they lean on us and we lean on them.
Well, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Connor Brogdon. And yeah. I mean, Alvarado was traded for Edgar Garcia, who was a pitcher that was a low money signing and was developed in the system. And they were able to convert that into, you know, a lights out reliever. So yeah, you know, these pieces, especially they come from anywhere, from any signing bonus, and they can all help. And that had to be really cool for you guys too, to see how many guys that came through the system that played key parts in that run.
No doubt. And you just hit it on the head. Like it's our goal to,
and we forgot Ranger Suarez too.
Yeah. He can't forget Ranger. Yeah. But again, I mean, our job is to make big leaguers. And if that's for the Phillies, that's the cherry on top. But there's 29 other teams that are always looking, whether it's in a trade or whatever it may be. And that's what our job is to build trade value for our front office and to go get us pieces that can help us get to a World Series year in and year out. And you hate to see a Ben Brown doing what he's doing for another organization, but you love it for the kid. He's super talented. Yeah. And he took off, but it got us a key piece in David Robertson last year, much on the offensive side. I mean, you hate to see Logan O'Hoppe go, but you knew he was going to be a big leaguer. But we get a stable outfielder and Brandon Marsh, and it helps us get to a World Series.
You mentioned you had 125 or so guys, including the Dominican Summer League pitchers. Ranger spent, I think, 3 full years in the but they don't have that anymore, but at the Venezuelan Summer, now he would just go to the Dominican, but at the time in the Venezuelan Summer League, which is, you know, really incredible. I can't remember too many guys that spent 3 full years in the Venezuelan Summer League and even made it to here, let alone made it to, you know, the Phillies and be a key piece in their rotation. It's pretty amazing story.
No doubt. And I think, you know, that's the goal of the minor leagues. And now, like, you have less levels than it was four or 5 years ago. So, you know, to be able to take your time and be able to develop, you know, a piece like him, an athletic guy that can throw strikes. And, you know, development never stops. Even once he got to the big leagues, he was continuing to develop stuff, whether it was a sinker, whether it was a slider, whatever it may be, and continuing to develop physicality and velocity to go along with his pitchability. And again, now he had different roles in 2021. But again, like, you have time to be able to develop him. And there's so many coaches and staff members that he comes into contact along the way. That's where the continuity and the message that is driven to that pitcher and his development plan has to be on the same page. Everyone has to be, and we have to be able to pivot and make good decisions and sound decisions and work those out together in order for the betterment of the pitcher. And he's one of many examples. And it's, you want homegrown talent like that, and you want your system to be able to influence him and develop him along the way and continue to pump out big league quality stuff.
Yeah. I mean, obviously for on the big league side, you know, you can have him much more affordable, because if you have to go get him on the open market, it'll cost you, you know, 15 to 20 million or whatever. And then that's money that you can go spend on Kyle Schwarber or whatever you want to do. So,
exactly.
So your background, you came for, you were coaching in Iowa. How did you end up at a junior college in Iowa for many years? How did you end up here?
That's a great question. I didn't pitch an inning of pro ball. I was a junior college pitcher, pitched NAIA, got started. I pitched at Mount Mercy College in Cedar Rapids, ended up coaching there for a year, and then went to North Iowa Area Community College as an assistant for 8 years. Mason City, Iowa, it's a top at the top of Iowa. I still live there. My wife and kids, we have a house there still. So I just travel in and out. Became the head coach there for 7.5 years. And how I think maybe my name got out there, or our brand got out there, it was really like social media. We just promoted our program. We promoted our players a ton. A lot of people started seeing that, and there was this rush of, you know, college coaches that started to get plucked up into professional baseball. And, you know, at the time I didn't have any aspirations to do that. And our former farm director, Josh Bonifay, reached out to me and asked me about being an assistant pitching coordinator. And I really had no idea what that was at the time. And, you know, I boil it down to really you're the head coach of a department, and you lean on your coaches, your assistants, whoever it may be, just like you are when you're a head coach. It's just a bigger department and a lot more things to handle. So I interviewed on the phone. It was a rigorous interview, and then flew out to Philly for another long day of interviews, and wound up taking the job just right before COVID. So COVID was my first year of professional baseball, which was pretty wild, but still felt like we made the most of it as an organization during that time and continued to grow. And here I am now. This is year four for me. So very fortunate and enjoying every minute of it.
I mean, it had to be challenging, right, in 2020, because, you know, you're a hands-on pitching coach working with your, we'll call it 20 guys that you had in college. And then you have 100 guys that you're going to get to work with, and you get to see zero of them live, except maybe whatever you got in the fall of 19. But, you know, you get to see zero of them live, and you have to kind of figure out a way to work with them and talk to them and learn from them and learn about them and teach them on Zoom without having ever seen them. At least some of the other coaches had that frame of reference where they had coached them or seen them previously. How did you do that in 2020?
Yeah, I think that's where I think we really grew as a department, as an organization. And we would be on Zoom twice a week as a group, and we would discuss four pitchers each call. So we were on Zoom for a good 2 to 3 hours twice a week. And again, it was that integrative talk. We would look at it from head to toe. You know, how do they look physically? How are they built functionally? What's their stuff? Where do we need to improve? And then the challenge for us as a pitching department was building out throwing programs and trying to recreate a season for them. And when they were different parts of the country, different parts of the world, we're trying to ship them resources, whether it was, you know, baseballs, whether it was weighted baseballs, whatever it was, to help with their development plan. We tried to recreate a season for them and tried to build innings, and we would get videos of guys throwing bullpens and live BPs and doing drills. And I thought it really helped us move forward as a department, and we made the most of it. And I know coming out of it, we had instructional league that year in 2020, and we saw a ton of benefits, and we had momentum going into the 21 season. And you saw some guys flourish. I still reference Ben Brown, you know, how he came out of COVID and became the pitcher that he was. But there was a number of guys, recent signs and drafts that year that really flourished as well. And, you know, we're better for it.
So you said before, you know, you're pretty much on the road most of the season, and you have, I mean, putting aside for now, just the complex and the Dominican Summer League guys, just the four affiliates, you know, you can only see one a day. I feel like the easiest way to follow everything would be like sit in a basement with four screens up and you can watch everything, but obviously you can't do that. So right. what's the most challenging part, and how do you kind of stay on top of, all right, so you were with Redding yesterday. All right, well, I want to, yeah, I got to check the four guys that threw for Lehigh and the three guys that threw for Jersey Shore and the four guys that threw for Clearwater, and you do this day after day after day.
Yeah. It is challenging. I always tell myself you're going to miss things, but that's why you lean on your support staff and your coaches. We have systems in place for communication. We have incredible technology. We get daily reports, you know, whether it's pitch metrics and pitch performances and outcomes. We have it all dialed down into a report that we get daily. So with our video systems and pitch tracking and our reporting, day in and day out, you're able to stay on top of things. And again, I can't say enough about our coaching staff, and they are phenomenal. I am not a micromanager either. I'm constantly in communication with those guys, because I think the one thing as a pitching coordinator, I probably look at 75 to 80% of the time, Greg, on my computer is our schedule. We have a mass schedule. It's a big grid, and it's just making sure we've got pitching. It's always making sure that we're covered. And there's always, like, we're going to have a couple, you know, we have Noah Song in rehab right now.
Yep.
Sir Anthony Dominguez is going to come down for a rehab assignment. So we've got to make sure that we're buttoned up there and just making sure that we have coverage along the way, whether there's an injury or, hey, a starter only went two innings and we blew up the bullpen. You know, we've got to make sure we get an arm there. We're in constant communication. So that's probably a big bulk of my job, is making sure that we're covered in innings and you're managing workload as well too. I think that's one thing that's really been a big, like, move the needle for us with our higher performance and our sports science, is really managing workloads and being smarter about that. I know last year we adjusted in how we built our starters. We went away from the traditional, you know, 4-day turn and went more of like a college style once a week. We did that with Mick Abel, Andy Painter, Griff McGarry, Ben Brown, and a number of other starters. And we saw a ton of benefit in their physical development, and we were still able to achieve their innings goals that we set out for them in the beginning of the year. So again, we're always looking at, you know, reliever workload as well too. And coming out of the All-Star break, how we wanted to, you know, get guys a little bit of a break, but also make sure that they're ready coming out of the break and try to limit as many injuries as possible. So again, a ton of support staff and a ton of information to stay on top of all that.
Some of those innings goals last year were, I don't want to call them ambitious, but they were aggressive for, you know, for what, compared to a lot of other organizations. And I know Matt Gelb wrote an article in The Athletic, and he said basically the Philly, you know, every teams will prioritize, you know, velocity, strikeout, spin rate, whatever. But you guys also prioritize innings pitched as a goal for all these guys. You know, talk about that kind of aggressive style as you try to build these guys up.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that Brian Kaplan, Mark Lowe, and myself last year, when we were really looking at this and how, you know, we had a lot of these younger arms that we needed to prioritize innings, but we needed to prioritize physicality and durability. How are we going to go about doing that and still be able to achieve those goals? And we really looked at the schedule and said, okay, here's our way to do it. Here's where we can program in some mini deloads, whether it was backing down, or, hey, we're going to push here. And so inside our organization, you know, there's a way that we can track workload. Our medical department and our IBP has put it together for us, and we took it and ran with it. And, you know, we set out these goals and we wanted to make sure that we were checking these points along the way, and it worked out. And you don't do that without, again, good medical team, good communication, prioritizing things in the weight room. And I referenced early in the year with Mick Abel when he was with Jersey, he was pitching on Saturdays, and he wasn't able to get the days that we needed in the weight room and the work that he needed in the weight room. So we adjusted him to Fridays, where he was getting good, you know, three good lifts in between each start. So again, that communication and that adjustment, again, helped Mick in achieving those goals. And ultimately, the ultimate goal is getting to those innings. We wanted 100 plus innings, get to, you know, from start to finish. And he did. And that was a huge, player development success story for us. And, but again, it comes down to working together, putting together a solid plan, being able to pivot on that plan.
How have you integrated the old school? I hate to just simplify it like old school, new school, but the traditional baseball old school coaching with the new technological methods and data that you get. Was that something that you guys had when you were coaching in Iowa? Did you do the drive line? And a lot of people did the drive line thing at that time and still do. How do you go about integrating that stuff with the front office?
Yeah, it's art of pitching, blending it with the science of pitching. And when you look at our department in general, we have all of that. I think it stems from Caleb in the big leagues, who again, he is art of pitching, science of pitching, and probably one of the best. And then you bring in a guy like Brian Kaplan, who comes from, Cressy Sports Performance. So you're talking about the body and how guys are anatomically built and how they function, and what we can do to intervene with that to help make, sustain sound deliveries and powerful deliveries. And then, blending, whether it's using, some type of skill acquisition with weighted baseballs, like a drive line or an athletic pitcher, whatever it may be, and where we can piece that into a guy's development plan. Do they need it at all? Not every guy is going to be a one size fits all. So when we talk about having this menu of options, and where on the menu do we pull to help a guy, in his development plan, and having all of that and being open-minded to it as well, but being creative more than anything, being responsible, but yet being creative, I think is really important. Cause at the end of the day, Greg, it comes down for us to building stuff, building big leaguers. How do we able to, understand what's their best weapons? Where do they locate their pitches, and what do they need to do to go pitch and be successful, and teach them the craft of pitching? And I think this whole old school, new school, like for me is that's kind of a, I don't say lazy, but it's just kind of a lazy way of saying it, where it's like, hey,
art and science sounds so much better.
Pitching is an art. Yeah. Pitching is an art. And so much has changed with how we can track pitches and track movement and, biomechanically, inside of our organization, we've made a ton of advances as well. So it helps us be able to put together this puzzle and solve this mystery in pitching, if you will, to just pump out better big leaguers and pump out better quality pitchers. The ultimate goal is to get guys out. And that still hasn't changed. It's about getting 27 outs. And that hasn't changed. It's withstood the test of time in pitching and in baseball, but there's other ways to be able to go about that. And again, when you're having 125 pitchers, whatever it is, our goal as an organization is to raise the floor of each and every guy, no matter what their prospect status is, no matter what their signing bonus was. We want to raise the floor and raise value in each and every guy.
That's the physical stuff. I feel like the mental side, you pair up, and this is the first time that you guys have done this here. Phil, 20-year coaching veteran, and Brady, who pitched literally a year ago. And in talking to the guys here, they love the, like black and white cookie kind of thing that the two of them have, different backgrounds, but they mesh perfectly together. And, all these guys talk about how much they love working with Brady because he kind of understands where they were or where they are now, because he went through that literally a year ago. He's pitching a year ago in the Toronto system. So how did that kind of come to be, and why do you think they work so well together?
They're the dynamic duo. And we honestly, Greg, when we interviewed both those guys in the offseason, we felt this was going to be a really good pairing, and we nailed it. Phil, for one, his experience and even back in my college days, I still knew of Phil and his reputation, when he was at Seton Hall and Rutgers. And, he came to us by way of Vic Diaz, our lower level pitching coordinator, who had a relationship with him. And I knew he wanted to get a little bit closer to home, and it all worked out for us. But the thing that stuck out for me with Phil was his temperament and his patience. and his ability to connect. And that's coaching right there. Building trust, the ability to connect, and being patient. And that's what I loved about Phil. And Phil's like this chameleon too, because he is, you know, been around the game forever and has like a mental performance type background. Mm-hmm. But also when you're talking about art of pitching, and then when he was in the Toronto organization, you know, learning again, the body and biomechanics and pitch, you know, ball flight and pitch data, bringing that into our organization with the art of pitching and blending it with science, we nailed it. And I think that level's great for him, because he can be that kind of like more of a, like a veteran presence, if you will. But I love his temperament, and what him and Brady have done is they've really, again, I think that staff has outpitched their stuff at times, and they've really, really grown. And what they've done from May and June into July is absolutely phenomenal as a pitching staff. And we haven't helped them much. You know, I know we've pushed the bullpen a little bit there. We've gotten a little bit creative with how we cover innings, but again, it comes down to Brady and the kind of the culture and environment that he's created in that bullpen. It's I joked with him on one trip. I said, I'm going to put in my report that we're lacking a little energy in the bullpen, which was far from it. Brady brings that drive. I think he's done a great job of transitioning, which is really hard going from player to coach right away. But again, you're talking about a guy that was in minor league baseball a little time in the big leagues for about 10 years. He brings that, hey, this is what players didn't like when organizations would dump all this information on there. This is what they did like. And so he can take that experience and now piece it into each and every individual. And those two and that staff in Jersey with Mark, with Meg, and with Tori, they have absolutely crushed it when it comes to development goals and the physicality of some of those pitchers. And the stuff has continued to tick up, but the performance has continued to improve.
I just want to touch on two or three guys. One of them you sent up to where you are now, to Reading, Orion Kirkering. A couple of weeks ago, he kind of burst onto the scene. I don't want to say out of nowhere, but he burst onto the scene. This year, he just toyed with hitters in Clearwater and did a great job here too. Did you realize you had, when you saw him for the first time last summer and into the fall, you know, did you realize you had a guy that had that kind of dynamic stuff right away?
Well, I mean, this goes back to where it all starts, is scouting, and Brian and his group identified Orion right off the bat. I remember getting some information on him. Hey, this is a kid that we were on, and actually during spring training, with South Florida being right across the way, mm-hmm. A few of us were able to go over and watch him, and the stuff was real. And I think the one thing with Orion, like, we knew the stuff was real, but then where he really benefited along with a lot of our younger arms was our high performance camps this off season. We had the hurricane come through, which knocked out half of Instructs, which might've been a blessing in disguise. The guys got a little bit of a break. Their arms got a little bit of a break, but then once everything cleared out, we were able to do these high performance camps. And again, we were able to blend weight room, arm care, on-ramping throwing, deloads, all these things, pitch development, whatever it was, we're able to blend all of those and really bring a training environment into our complex in the off season. And Orion really, you know, cleaned up his body, gained a ton of strength, really understood how his body functioned and moved. And he took it and ran with it. Obviously there's been a big bump in velocity, but I think that the one thing with Orion is we've identified a role for him. Hey, you're this one inning reliever. Where in college, he went from relieving to starting to closing. It was very
that probably inconsistent. That had to cost him two rounds in the draft, I would think, right?
No doubt. So again, great job by our scouting department, and then knowing, you know, how we were going to go about developing this guy. And yeah, he's flown through the system. He's developed a sinker as well too, which is paired well with the slider. Got to see him pitch again yesterday, and again, you just get wild with the stuff, and the moment doesn't get too big for him. I know he gave up a two-run homer the other night, blew a save in Reading. It's really the first time, the only blemish he's really had, and he bounced right back. And he's got a short-term memory. He understands the big picture, and you know, hopefully we can continue to keep him healthy and continue to thrive in our system.
Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations, and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart, shop local, shop PC Richard & Son. How have Mick Abel and Griff McGarry, I know they got a taste of Reading last year, but how have they adapted to their first full seasons here in Double A?
Phenomenal. I think with Mick, there's such high expectations in our system. You know, obviously, coming off the news of Andy Painter yesterday, which is unfortunate, but yeah. Mick's continued to thrive. He's still young. He's 21. The stuff is real. He had an opportunity. I got to see it personally, which was fantastic, out in Seattle at the Futures game. He got the W, got the start, basically a home game for him. And the stuff continues to develop. His changeup is developing. He's developed a wipeout curveball to go along with the big velo and the slider. And again, it's those hitter-to-hitter adjustments that, you know, Brad Bergson, our pitching coach here, you know, continues to talk about with his development plan. And Bergie is crushing it with him, and he's learning how to become a pitcher and manage a game two times through the order, three times through the order, and go deep into games. And he continues to learn and continue to grow. And he's going to make an impact for us in the big leagues at some point here. The stuff is real, and he continues to get physical. And then Griff, I know he's a little slow out of the gate with the oblique injury. But, you know, he's really turned a corner here. We've made some adjustments in his delivery and just tempo. And I think the one thing with Griff is he's never going to be this big physical, you know, imposing looking guy. But if we can develop that explosive strength, which we are, I think that's going to hone in the command for him, because the stuff is off the charts real. I mean, you got to see it a lot last year, and it's a unicorn fastball with an unbelievable power slider. And a really developing changeup. And he posted up an unbelievable outing the other night in Reading. And Mick gets the ball tonight, Griff tomorrow night. So I get to see both of them back to back, which is great, but thriving.
And you guys have been committed to him as a starter. I know, depending on what you read or whatever, you know, people have said, well, he could go to the pen and be a lights out, you know, two inning reliever or whatever. You guys have been steadfast in your commitment to him as a starter.
Yeah, I know last year, it was late in the year where there was some injuries in the big leagues, and we looked at him as an option. So we got him in AAA and adjusted into the reliever role. And that was to be able to, you know, to cover if need be, you know, cause it is big league stuff. But, you know, fortunately, you know, we had, you know, Eflin, you know, served in a relief role last year and was healthy enough. Sir Anthony, all those guys, and the rest was history. But I think the thing with Griff Russ is the reason that we have him in that role is consistent starts, just consistent outings, and then the physical development in between, and the stuff development and command development in between as well. We can really just hone in on that in those days in between outings, rather than sort of inconsistent. Oh, is he going to pitch tonight? Is he not? We can get consistent work along the way. And at the end of the day, like, starting pitching in the big leagues is incredibly difficult to find. And this year, I mean, it's been, you know, influx with injuries in the big league. So, but if we can develop big time starters, and yeah, eventually does he shift into a reliever role? Maybe. But you look at I know the comp is always Spencer Strider, and you look at how he came up and how he's bursted on the scene as a starter. Like, that's what we feel we can do with Griff. And in the long run, if it's a starter, great. If not, we got a heck of a reliever, like you said.
Yeah, and it's easier to go from starter to reliever. It's not as easy to go from reliever to starter, especially in the middle of a year. So you always have that. Down here, you got Tommy McCollum, who's had a really solid year. He had an unbelievable year last year with Clearwater, and then unfortunately broke his leg, or he probably would have finished last year with the Blue Claws. How have you seen him progress over the year? I know he throws that little split change thing that not a lot of guys throw. What have you seen from him?
Again, just big physical stuff, and the big.
He was a nice find too by the scouting. Right. Department, by the way. Yeah.
For a non-drafted sign, again, and Brian and Co have done an unbelievable job with a number of those, and Tommy being one of them. Obviously, you see him; he's big, he's physical, it's imposing, but it's such a unique fastball. I know in spring training, I would watch some of the games and I would sit behind the plate. And if you're a hitter and you see this, you know, this heater that's like just extension and kind of a funky arm action, and it gets on you at, you know, mid to upper 90s, it's uncomfortable. And then you add in a splitter and sort of this like developing slider cutter that he has. The big thing is, it's just getting in the zone. And he's done a tremendous job this year of being in the zone more consistently, taking on a little bit more of a, you know, a one day off, one inning workload. And he's done an awesome job with that in big leverage innings. I know Bulls put him in some high leverage innings, and he's done a great job with that. And he continues to develop. And like when you see big leaguers and the uniqueness that big league relievers have these days, he falls into that bucket. So we want to continue to hone in on the uniqueness and continue to get him in the zone and hopefully continue to move up the ranks and help our big league club.
How do you measure, you said his fastball makes hitters uncomfortable. How do you measure that? Or is that something you just kind of have to see, talk to the catchers? Like, how do you look at that?
Yeah, I mean, deception is, it comes in many forms, you know, whether it's hiding the baseball or it's a unique arm slot or, you know, like him, it's a unique kind of takeaway, but then like the big extension that he has and how sort of the ball flies into the zone, it's a unique heater that way. Whether it's ride, whether it's carry, whether, you know, sink for some guys. But yeah, measuring deception is something I think is on the forefront of a lot of player development and organizations these days, whether it's a delivery deception thing or, you know, how a guy, like you see, like the invisible, right? Like, you know, how guys are able to spin the baseball and work in different areas of the zone. And it may not throw hard or whatever it may be. And they get outs, they get swings and misses, they get results, and deception comes in many forms. And, you know, we're trying to quantify that a little bit. And I think what we've done on the scouting front too, is trying to go out and identify some of those guys. And you see some of the guys we've signed and some the guys we've acquired, you know, we're looking at those aspects as well.
The guy that I always think of when we talk about something like this is a Rubio Armenta. I know he's been hurt and he's missed the whole year. But he's a lefty, and he would throw the ball like 90 to 91, and everybody would be late on it. It would be like a belt high, like right down the middle, and they'd be late on it. Yep. And if he threw it like letter high, 92, nobody would hit it. And then he had a really good change, and has a really good changeup as well. But like you just watch him, and it's like, well, for them to be all late on it, he has to hide the ball like yep. tremendous behind his head. And, you know, he's a big, tall guy, but he gets his arm all the way back. So by the time they pick it up, it plays it like it's 96 or 97.
No, you nailed it. And Rubio's a great, great example of that with, again, just how the ball flies, how maybe it doesn't have that vertical drop. It stays true to the zone, and then it works above the barrel. And, like, gosh, how can they not square up 91? But the way the ball flies and the way it enters the zone and just misses barrels, like that's the uniqueness right there of a unique heater. But also, again, he's got arms and legs going everywhere, and
oh, yeah.
It's interesting. He's a converted outfielder from our academy and converted into pitching. And I remember when he showed up in extended spring training in 21, and he was just blowing the doors off of guys. Who's this guy? And he flew through the system that year and ended up in Double A. And unfortunately, you know, had an injury, but we're hoping we can get him, you know, healthy and back into it next year, because it's a dynamic arm. And when you look at the big leagues, this, you know, in this day and age, and it's funkiness, and it's, again, deceptive and just different looks, like he fits that mold. And, you know, hopefully we can get him back healthy and get him back on track.
Ask you one more Blue Claw. He's pitching tonight. We're taping this on Thursday, the 20th. And Gunnar yeah. Mayer is going to pitch tonight. And I feel like he's the exact pitcher that got hurt the most by the COVID year, because he didn't start pitching till late in his junior year of high school. He gets 1 year at junior college. He's still, even after 1 year at junior college, he's basically had two seasons of competitive pitching, and he's still only 18. So he's like, a young junior college draft pick. He comes into the system at 18, gets the 1 year, and then 2020, whether he would have gone to Williamsport or most likely, or maybe even here, but, yep. Because it was low A at the time. But anyway, whether yep. he goes to short season or low A, that's the guy that you expect to take that big jump in 2020. He loses the whole year. And then, you know, it takes him a little while. He's shown some signs this year, you know, tall, hard throwing. Obviously, he can add to his frame a little bit. Feels like he's like the perfect like lab specimen for you guys yep. to mold over the course of a few seasons.
No, you're spot on. And yeah, Gunner was actually one of the guys that was on my we all had a call list in 2020 for COVID. So we had weekly check-ins, and Gunner was a guy that, again, thrived during the COVID era with physicality and strength. And I mean, he was up to 97 during that time. We brought him in during instructs and liked where he was. Yeah. And 21 had some shoulder injuries and just, you know, just some funky things happen. And then he was rolling last year and then had to have the appendix taken out, and it really, yeah, just kind of derailed the season a little bit. But I think the one thing that Gunner continues to improve on is know who he is, know how his body moves and how he functions, and then how his stuff plays. And yeah, you'll see a mid 90s fastball as a starter. It probably sits more that 2-3 range, but he can run it up there 95, 96. And then the developing cutter slider that he has, and then he's got a wipeout changeup. And really for him, it's like, it's really honing in on that command. But also like when and where is really important for him early in the count, and then where to go finish guys. So again, learning his craft. And yes, he's very young for his pitching age, very raw. But then you look at the body, 6'6", 6'7", you know, this big frame, and he's just learning how to pitch more than anything. So for us, it's getting consistent starts. I don't care if he goes 2 innings or 6 innings. He's pitching every 6-7 days. He's getting the work that he needs in between starts. He's, again, learning pitching. And I know a big part of his development plan with Phil and Brady and his sides is execution. It's an execution focus. It isn't, you know, trying to get this sweep or trying to get this vertical break. It's, hey, where am I going to locate this to this right-hander, you know, before two strikes? And then when I get to two strikes, where am I going and why am I going there? And so really learning the nuances of pitching. And Phil and Brady have done a tremendous job with him, and he continues to grow and develop. And you know, we're really excited about Gunner.
You said he has a big time changeup. You know, I know it kind of used to be, speaking generally, you know, a guy would come in and he gets drafted, right? He's got a good fastball, he's got a good curveball or a slider, and then we'll see what happens. If he can develop the changeup, he could stay as a starter. If not, he might have to go to the bullpen or whatever. And everybody would try to teach that changeup because it was such a difficult pitch to hit, comes into the same plane as the fastball and just kind of falls off the table 10 miles an hour slower. Is it still kind of that way? Do you see more guys coming in with better changeups, and do you still view it as one of the more tougher pitches to hit? Or is, I know now it's more like fastball power slider for a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm. I think with this day and age, when you're understanding, you know, ball flight and, you know, so much now is, you know, why movement is created. And, you know, there's different, you know, guys that create movement in different ways, just with how their hand and wrist functions and how they can manipulate a seam to get the ball to move a certain way. And I think that's where you're starting to see sinkers come back. I mean, obviously people talk about seam shift all the time and seam effects, and that's a real thing. And I think as an organization, we've learned a lot about that with, you know, how guys can spin the baseball. And he's one of them where, hey, if I'm going to create this type of movement, this is how I want to, you know, sort of deploy the baseball. So I think you're seeing more guys coming out of high school and college have a better understanding of what their ball flight is. So kind of that traditional, you know, sinker back in the day, and then it went away because everyone was chasing ride and, you know, power breaking balls. You know, now you're seeing a lot more east-west movement. You're seeing even relievers having multiple pitches, not just two pitches anymore. They've got, you know, you got to be platoon neutral. So you got to be able to pitch the both handed hitters now with the 3-batter minimum in the pockets. And you look at a guy like Connor Brogdon in the big leagues, he's with AAA now. And, you know, Connor can throw his changeup to both handed hitters, and it's a devastating pitch. You know, he developed a cutter back in 19 and became a serious weapon for him to combat lefties. So, you know, we just have to find what works best and what can get outs to both sides of the plate and both handed hitters.
I know a lot of your guys throw cutters now, the vast majority of them. What about that pitch has been so important? You know, when do you start to kind of teach it to them?
I think it's needed when you're talking about pitching to both-handed hitters. To me, a cutter becomes a protection pitch, whether you're protecting your slider or protecting your heater, because I think you're seeing in general across baseball that unless you have a unique heater, you're probably going to throw it less often and deploy more breaking stuff or more cutters, more changeups in order to protect that heater. Because you see it all the time. Like I watch it, like what do most organizations try to hit? They're trying to hit velo. So they crank up the machines and they're trying to get to heaters and they just try to hunt that out. So we got to be able to combat that. But I think you also have to be responsible with it too. I know the sweeper rage is all across baseball, but you've got to understand, again, from a workload standpoint, you know, the training economy, how much stress we're putting on the arm. You know, we want to make sure that guys can sort of crawl before they walk. So we have to develop them physically and understand their functionality. And so we as an organization, when new guys come in, we want to see what they have, and we're not going to make a knee-jerk reaction just because of a trend in baseball. We want to make sure that we're responsible with it, and the level sort of tells us what a guy needs. And a lot of times when we're going to create a new pitch, I think of Alex McFarland in Clearwater. Hopefully he's in Jersey soon. But we added in a sinker, but we did it in the off season. It wasn't something we did in season because, you know, we want to be responsible with it. We want them to have success, but a lot of times you add a new pitch, like it's a daunting task for some guys. So we want to be responsible in where we go about doing that from a physical standpoint and from a mental standpoint.
The sweeper being like, you have the fastball, the mm-hmm. cutter between the fastball and the slider, and then the slider in between the cutter and the sweeper, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm 43. So I remember watching Dave Steeb with the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, he might've been the godfather of the sweeper. I mean, he had that like sweeping power slider. And, I know back, 5-6 years ago, we were all chasing sort of that gyro bullet slider. And then there became all this information about, how seams affect ball flight. And I just think you're seeing across baseball now where the uniqueness and deception, like we talked about earlier, is so important that comes into ball flight and, developing those weapons to be able to protect pitches and get guys out. Like, hitting's hard enough as it is. And you're seeing it across baseball, whether it's hard cutters, sweeping sliders, power changeups, splitters are also coming back. It comes down to just building those arsenals and getting guys out, and we want to go about it in a responsible manner.
Are the baseballs notably different going to AAA where they use the big league balls? Like, a guy goes from Reading to Lehigh, does it?
Yes,
notably different.
Yeah. So Tyler McKay, the pitch with the Blue Claws last mm-hmm. year, I was fortunate enough to be in Lehigh last weekend when he got his call up. And we noticed the ball flight on him. He's a big sinker, changeup guy, slider as well, sweeper, slider, lower slot. But we noticed how much the ball, the lower seams, affected his pitch movement. So that is a real thing. So when you hear in the media, if we do call up a guy and get him to AAA, we want to get the big league ball in his hand just for him to get a feel for it, and then also just how the ball flies. It does make a difference.
And then last question, you guys have a pretty special team down there in Florida with Clearwater. If you haven't, I know you probably read it, but for those that haven't, Alex Coffey wrote a great story in the Inquirer on Thresher run the other that went on July, I think it was the 13th, last Thursday, but check that one out. I know I don't want to ask you about specific guys and who's coming whenever, but there'll be guys that will be here, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, they'll be here. And everybody will be patient and you'll get to see him with the Blue Claws. But who's kind of caught your eye down there that people should be aware of that's kind of had kind of big breakthrough seasons for you?
The first guy, Sam Aldegheri, our Italian lefty. He's 20 years old. He stayed healthy. I think that's the number one thing for him. He's unique stuff. He's got a really good heater, developing like harder slider and a developing changeup. He throws strikes. He's racked up a ton of strikeouts. He's one of the leaders in our Oregon strikeouts. He's posted up every week. He's done a phenomenal job. Alex McFarland, who was a fourth round pick last year, we've kind of put Alex in like this little deload phase right now. He'll be back toward the end of the year, whether that's for Clearwater or Jersey, we don't know yet, but he's close to coming back as well. Not an injury, but just more of like, hey, we wanted to give him a break. Yeah. Use the all-star break to our advantage, but he'll be back and reach his inning goal. Obviously Wesley Moore came up not too long ago. He really dominated down there, but Andrew Walling is another lefty that we got undrafted last year. Big fastball, big slider. He's kind of pitching some high leverage innings down there for them. And then Johan Henriquez, who's 11-0, gonna be a 20-game winner.
In relief.
he's got unique stuff as well. He's done a tremendous job. I know Marty loves him. He's durable. And then Pon, our big righty, Taiwanese righty that
who just signed in January.
Yes. It's a big heater. He got a nasty splitter as well, much like Tommy, and a developing slider, and he's really bursted onto the scene. So I think he's one that you'll see there. If not at some point this year, you'll definitely see him next year.
Travis, this was awesome. I kept you longer than I said I would, but I appreciate a few minutes, and hopefully you'll get one more trip into to Jersey by the end of the season.
I enjoyed it, and I think I will be there in a couple of weeks. So always enjoy Shoretown Ballpark and the fans and how you guys treat us there. We're really lucky, and hopefully we can make a run here in the second half.
Yeah, go have some fun there with the new guys next week. That'll be fun for you.
Will do.
I'm sure. All right, thanks, Travis.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks to Phillies minor league pitching coordinator Travis Hergert for joining us on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Hope you guys enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. Gave you some great information. And a real pleasure to talk to Travis for that long. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Baseball fans, introducing Bally Live, the only app where minor league baseball fans can score major rewards. When you stream your favorite teams live, you'll score rewards. When you test your skills at trivia, you'll score rewards. And being a fan of the minor leagues has never been so rewarding. What are you waiting for? Download Bally Live for free from the app or Google Play Store and start scoring rewards today. Blue Claws are in Winston-Salem for the weekend. We taped another one of these with pitcher Mitch Noonborn, so that'll be up in a couple of days or so back home. Two-week homestand starts on Tuesday night, the 25th, 6 with Aberdeen, and then 6 with Brooklyn. Fireworks on July 28th, August 4th, and a special show on Saturday, August 5th. August 4th is Star Wars night as well. So a lot going on, two Thursdays, three fireworks shows, and more. Check it out, blueclaws.com/tickets. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a good day. Thanks to Travis Hergert for joining us. This has been Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.